I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 502. Every time he dies, it's traumatic.
What do you mean, every time?
Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hello, friends.
How you doing?
I'm alive, so I'll take that as a win.
See, that's what happens when you try to go out there and play like you 23 and you're not.
Nope.
Okay, like, think of all the times that you used to laugh at me, okay? When I would try to go out and break the dawn, and then I would come home, and the next day, be like, oh, Jesus, why, Lord, And you laughed at me.
Yep, yeah.
You called me many a name that was not nice.
Yep.
And, karma.
Yep.
But you had a good time. So, enough with the cryptic stuff. Panda was out breaking the dawn. It's caught up to her as far as this podcast goes, but we break for only donuts, or holidays. So with that, we've got a brand new show to talk, all kinds of stuff with you this week. Mainly gonna do some game stuff and some anime stuff. Cause I mean, we are an anime and video game podcast, so we should talk about those things.
So what do we have to do first?
Well, there's a couple of things I want to talk to before we get to our topics, because there's, you know, some things out in the news roaming around we should probably talk about. You know, there was Gamescom, and some stuff was announced to Gamescom, game-wise. You know, there's all kinds of pre-order things floating about. Now, you heard that Adult Swim Games is doing a Toe Jam and Earl.
Yep, I heard that news.
Okay, and they're actually going to have stuff for people to look at. Don't know if you're going to be able to play, but at least look at PAX West, which it is still very weird for me to call it PAX West. I just want to call it Prime. I know it's West, but to me it's still Prime because it was the first one. And I don't know, PAX West, it sounds like one of Kanye's kids and not...
Funny.
See what I did there? It was a funny ha-ha. So I'm just going to continue to call it Prime. So whenever I say Prime, guys, know that I'm talking about PAX West, which is happening without us. But that's okay. You know, we're going to make it back to Prime soon. Hopefully next year. I know we say it almost every year now, but I really do hope that next year the team is able to go to West. Because I would like to have the whole team gathered to do that, because I think we would have a ball, and I think that you would enjoy the coverage that we come up with. West is... like 3 times bigger than East. I don't know about Australia, but I will definitely say it is like 3 times bigger than East as far as just the expo floor and all the tabletop things that are available, and it would just be a great experience, I think, for the team. So hopefully we will have some West coverage coming up for you soon. But I don't know. There's a lot of pre-order bundles now that are out and about for the holiday. And I just feel like people are going to be broke this holiday if you go in on games. And I don't know if it's necessarily for, like, the best of reasons. And I'll say it like this. There are a lot of console pre-order bundles that are available. I probably should have said it that way first. There's the rumors of the Neo console actually being available this holiday season. You know, the beefed up PlayStation 1. A couple of sites actually did quote-unquote unboxings of the Neo system, even though it's actually not out as being available yet. And so there was rumor-real stuff around that being embargo-breaking or just flat-out bull. know, because it's really difficult as far as the look of the console to tell the difference between the PlayStation 4K system and the non-4K system. I don't know. I guess because I don't have a 4K TV, I'm not crazy excited.
I didn't think you were crazy about it as a whole. Like you said, the whole 4K thing.
I mean, 4K in your home, and I think I said this on some podcast, 4K in the home makes more sense to me than 3D in the home. You know, just because TVs are getting so big now, and they are also becoming so inexpensive. With more and more people streaming digital media and digital being able to be delivered at that higher resolution and to really be able to take advantage of high-capacity storage things like Blu-ray, it makes more sense to me, especially because more people are turning their home entertainment systems really into entertainment systems. You know, like, more and more people are going for the 65-inch and above TV, the ultra slim bezel, mounting it to a wall, you know, putting in real beefy sound systems, and, you know, because people are doing entertainment in more than out.
Okay.
Okay, so 4K, you know, an ultra high resolution, an ultra clear picture for your digital streaming and for your digital media makes more sense to me than 3D, right? Because all I have to get in order to take advantage of 4K really is a 4K TV, because you can stream some stuff in YouTube already at 4K. I imagine that there's going to be even more systems that stream that will provide 4K ability. So I don't have to buy any extra gear other than really a TV and have boom fatty Wi-Fi to take advantage of 4K. Versus 3D, where I had to have a special TV, and I had to have special eyewear, and then I had to have special programming, both on broadcast or on disc. Like, it just required so much more. So, while I'm not personally myself yet sold on a 4K TV for me, just because the TV that I have is really a beautiful TV, and the majority of stuff that I am watching, I'm watching at either 720 or 1080p, and that looks great for me for right now, but I do imagine that there's going to be a flood of affordable, large format 4K TVs, you know, that hit the market, and, you know, as 4K monitors become more prevalent, like 4K, I understand more. I'm not, rah, I gotta have this in my life, but I get it. You know, okay. When my TV dies, more than likely the next TV that I get is going to be a 4K TV.
All right.
But until then, you know, the TVs that I have are great for what I do on them. You know, I have a 720 TV that right now I'm literally using as a monitor for my Mac. And so I have a 42-inch monitor on my Mac because I'm using this TV for it. And then my entertainment center TV is a 65-inch LG, and I absolutely love it. I've got a gorgeous soundbar on it that has a wireless subwoofer, so I was able to put that in the back. So, you know, when it's movie night at my place, you know, the whole neighborhood knows that it's movie night, and I just try to be considerate and be done before midnight, but it's, you know, loud and proud. And I think by the time that I need a new TV, 4K TVs will kind of be the standard. And that's fine. It's not a bleeding edge thing that I'm jumping into. And I think if I probably played PC games more, especially if I was on the VR end of things, like, I would probably be more apt to be part of the 4K revolution right now and on the bleeding edge. But I don't. That's not my world right now. So I'm good with what I got. But I respect 4K. You know, every TV that I see that is 4K and some of the programming and some of the gameplay that I've seen on some 4K monitors, like, it looks gorgeous. Like, Bioshock on a 4K monitor, Infinite, looks unbelievably gorgeous. But it's not a, I must have this right now. Like, I'm more focused right now personally on my next big purchase for tech coming in is going to be VR. And I just don't know which way that's going to be yet.
So,
it's VR before 4K for me.
Okay, and 3D can shut the fuck up.
3D's dead. Like, so dead in your home. I don't think that you can even, like, find, like, if you go into a electronics store, you'll see LED TVs, and you'll see 4K TVs, and you'll probably still see some plasmas. But I don't think you'll even see, like, 3D ones anymore. I think everybody in the industry kind of realized, our bad, we'll stop trying to push that. Look over here, 4K, ooh. 4 comes after 3, ooh. Look at this, don't look at that. Which, again, that's fine. It's cool. Like, you learn from your mistake, but we can move on. And I think, for me at least, as more and more games kind of get and go through the remaster process for the current gen consoles and the consoles to come, it'll become more important to have that higher res TV because the remasters will be designed for it. You know, like the BioShock remaster that I heard about, like, I love the idea of being able to play Infinite on my current consoles. When I heard about how big it was going to be, it kind of threw me for a loop because it's like, might be 70 gigs. Now, that's for all the BioShock, which is cool. That's a lot of BioShock, okay, for 70 gigs. But right. That's still a chunk of your storage, any way you slice it. I don't know if I'm going to go that route yet, but we'll see. And like I said, you know, I keep seeing a lot of themed console bundles popping up, which, you know, is always the hint to me that holiday is here. When you start seeing, like, the Gears bundle for the Xbox One S.
You see your weight gain, but your wallet slim. Yeah, you know, my wallet, holiday.
Yo, my wallet be, like, real thin, though. I tried to open it up earlier and a moth just flew out and looked at me like, bruh, don't even go in there. Because, like, I've been going back and forth. Like, initially at E3 when Microsoft announced the Xbox One S, and then immediately on the heels of that, it was like, but we're still working on our next console and Project Scorpio is going to be like a maze balls and basically make this look like a polished turd. I was like, okay, well, I don't want your polished turd. If you've got, you know, shiny happy following behind that in like a year or so. But I keep thinking, like, I don't know. I don't really do a lot of motion games. And so having a system that is pure digital and has a better power supply and, frankly, a better controller, you know, the wireless controller has better range on the S than the previous systems. I like the built-in grips, you know, those kinds of things. The ability to do the limited edition version that starts off with 2 terabytes of storage, you know, is appealing. And the better chip and being able to support, you know, high-resolution content. It sounds kind of nice.
It does.
And, you know, having that for a year going into Scorpio doesn't really sound bad.
I think you're setting yourself up for, I think, the best win-win situation.
I feel like I might be. So I'm still on the fence, but I feel like, you know, a early anniversary present to myself may in fact be an Xbox S1, just because primarily where I am gaming is on my Xbox console. With the exception of console exclusives, I'm on my Xbox. That's the first place I go to get games. And, you know, it's not just because I'm an Xbox MVP, which I am, but it's just because I tend to enjoy the online gameplay community better on my Xbox One than my PlayStation. Even though as far as the controller goes, outside of my Elite controller, the PlayStation controller is much more comfortable in my hands than the Xbox.
Because of your baby hands.
I don't have baby hands. I have
small hands.
I have appropriate size lady hands. If I was of the Victorian era.
There we go. That, yes, baby hands. Moving on.
But I do. I have small hands. I have the hands of a child. And so the PlayStation DualShock controller is more comfortable for me to hold for long periods of time, but I enjoy the gameplay better on most games, especially shooters, on my Xbox. So I am a house divided in of myself, you know, and, but primarily, like, it's the Xbox way. So, long story short, pretty sure that I want to get an Xbox S1, Xbox One S. My dilemma now is, do I get the white one, or do I go with one of the themed bundles? Okay, cause I know that they've got a Gears one, and you know how I feel about Gears.
Yes. Okay.
I can't imagine that they're not going to do a Titanfall bundle.
I like Titanfall.
I like Titanfall, too. Okay. I don't know how I feel about Titanfall 2. I was not able to participate in the beta, but I don't know. Like, if I'm going to spend $400, do I just want the white one? Do I want something fancy? Because I will say that, like, this go-round of consoles is the first round of consoles that I've done that I have not got skins or something for them to cover the consoles. So my day one Xbox, PlayStation 4, and my Wii U are all in their original black. I actually have, for the first time, all my consoles are, in fact, all the same color. And I did not get any skins. I didn't get any ones with our branding on them or, like, anything else on them.
Why not? Then why not break the mold and get the white one to usher in the turn of the tech?
Yeah, I think so. So if you guys have any recommendations on what you think I should do, let us know. Hit us up on Twitter or on Instagram or on Facebook and just be like, yo, Ninja, this is what you need to do. And if you want to share a link, go ahead, share a link. Let me know. Get me to the place because October is coming. And if I'm going to be broke, I might as well be broke and smiling.
With some nice things.
You know, right? Like, if I'm going to be eating rice and beans, I might as well be eating rice and beans and enjoying a view of some sort. So,
hey, I like rice and beans. Yo, rice with red kidney beans with some butter on them.
Yo, with some peppers and onions.
Yes.
You're not doing it right if you're not using peppers and onions. Okay, now, I'm not talking about, like, bobo green peppers. I'm talking red, orange, yellow.
That sounds so fucking good.
Yeah, that's how I do it. That's how I do it. I saute some, and then I put some, like, and I cook slow with the rice. Then you put the sauteed ones on the top. We really need to not do this podcast when we're
hungry.
And there were a bunch of other console bundles, both on the PlayStation side and the Microsoft Xbox side, that happened around Gamescom. And I can only imagine that there's going to be more coming out of PAX West. So definitely keep an eye out on our website, because as news drops during West, even though we won't be there, we will definitely be covering it for sure and have opinions to share all across our website. So make sure you're checking out electricsisterhood.com. Now, on to the stuff of the day, shall we?
Yes.
I want to talk about a game from Adult Swim Games that I've been kind of sort of talking about for a while.
Well, I think the game is technically Double Fine, but released and published by Adult Swim Games.
So, some of the team at Double Fine worked and created the game. The publisher is Adult Swim Games. So, it is a Double Fine game presented by Adult Swim. I don't know, but the cool people are involved, okay? Let's start there. Because we've been really happy with what Adult Swim's games has been doing for a while now.
We had probably the best time with them during PAX East this year. And I mean, the game we're talking about was something that they were showing off at PAX, and we just got in on the, here's the game level, play it, check it out, and let us know what you think. So here we are talking about it, finally, because both of us sat through and played, not together, I'm afraid, but did play it. I thoroughly enjoyed my experience with it, like the colors and like the whole kind of premise, which we'll go into in a minute. This is just my overview. I mean, I read a lot of reviews that talked about it in the sense of Logan's Run. I've never watched Logan's Run.
Oh, dude. All right, so here's the thing. So we're going to be talking about Headlander, which we told you last week we were going to talk about. So it's no big surprise. We're talking about Headlander, which is made by Double Fine, released by Adult Swim Games. But it is for anyone who has watched Logan's Run, it is almost impossible to play the game and not feel like you are watching a Logan's Run type of video game. So Logan's Run, and Panda, you really just need to watch it.
I know. After
for
like
reasons alone, you need to watch it.
Literally after I played some, because I played some first, and then the fiance was like, "Wait, you got that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I have to talk about it on my show next week." And he's like, "Well, when you get tired, I would like to." And, like, at one point, I was nodding off because I was doing it late night. And I'm like, oh, I'm really close to this thing, and I can't figure this. I can't physically figure out this puzzle. And he said, let me help you, future wifey. And then he took it, and he was just like, man, this so reminds me of that thing that happens in Logan's Run. I'm like, I didn't watch it. And he was like, he smacked me. And he's like, bad nerd. Bad.
Yeah.
And told me we had to fix it. So.
Yeah, you need to.
Yeah, and all the reviews I read after my experience through, I was like, all right, I should probably watch this.
Yeah, so you need to watch Logan's Run for a few different reasons. You know, one of them being that it's just great history to know in the sci-fi world, if you are a sci-fi fan or sci-fi nerd, or want to call yourself that Logan's Run was the last great movie effects award winner before Star Wars. So Logan's Run is the example of just how advanced special effects were in movies, films, feature films, before Star Wars.
Okay.
Okay, because the following year after Logan's Run came out, the original Star Wars came out.
All right. So I mean, overall, like, I think for me, the thing that kind of resonates the strongest in this game is, one, it has some really good visuals, which, since you're talking about special effects and stuff, I'm sure that's where the reference comes in, with the banding of colors when you're, like, running, or in your hyper run, or whatever it's called, and, like, the particles when your head is doing its, you know, hovery thing, like, the particle physics there, I thought was really, really cool, and of course you love kind of watching this, like, firework, glitter effect type thing when you're zipping around. And you kind of, you feel more attached to stuff because it looks like how you'd expect it to behave. So, like, you get some satisfaction out of that. I mean, overall, the banter really kind of took precedent for me. Anytime you happen to be near a robot of some sort, and it has something to do with the puzzle that you're in, and, like, you could hear them talking, and when you take them over, like, if they happen to have, like, a different voice for when you assume the identity of one, like the little worky bots, in particular, like, I couldn't stop just wanting to be on a little Zumba and listen to them talk about their overthrowing the regime, sort of. Like, I was just like, I feel like I'm in the know. Like, what are we doing? I agree to this. And so you felt yourself aligning with their plot B, C, D type of storyline. And the dancing also was a nice little treat, depending on who you assumed. Like, the body would do, like, a little pose and or stance thing or a dance, and it was very, very well done, very refreshing. But we should probably talk about exactly the game and what you do in the game as opposed to the things you liked about the game.
Let me talk about what I love about the game.
Okay.
Number one, the vibe. Now, I have watched Logan's Run. I have watched many, many, many a sci-fi movie in my lifetime. I'm definitely nerdy. I make no bones about it. Nerdy AF. And what I love, I think, most about the game, and I agree, the banter is great, and we'll get into that, is just how thoughtful the game is in, one, paying homage to a very specific time in sci-fi history in the genre, but also really using a lot of nuance and current puzzle mechanics to make a game that feels really balanced. So, taking a step back in Headlander, in the game, you wake up and you're a disembodied head. And you got Earl, very southern sounding guy coming to you over a PA system somehow. Not exactly sure how that works. Must be some kind of gear in your helmet.
Oh, helmet. Again, rocket thing.
A disembodied head in a very advanced helmet. But you can't talk because, again, you're a disembodied head. You don't have lungs. So doesn't matter if you have vocal cords. Ain't no air coming through them.
Right.
Way, so
no vibrations, no sounds.
No sound from you. So Earl jumps on the PA and says, hey, don't freak out. Okay, I know you might, but we were able to wake you out of stasis. Pretty sure that you're the last flesh and blood human, maybe in the entirety of the universe. We'll get to that. Right now, we gotta get you off this ship. And so Headlander is a side-scrolling action puzzle game in that you have to traverse various stations, performing some acts that Earl tells you that you need to do in order to basically help what's left of his rebellious unit, which is trying to restore feeling to everyone, because the world was in a bad way, and so everyone decided to transfer their consciousness away from a physical human form to a robotic form. But now, this big supercomputer is controlling everything, and has put some things into those robotic bodies, so now people don't feel at all and don't go against the computer. So it's like master control if you...
Yeah, it's like Tron.
It's like the MCP. And the MCP is just like, I got all the people doing what I want. And so I want to keep that. I can't allow anything to come into the system to disrupt that. There are sentinels, and there are sentinels of different color, and they're basically police. So it's kind of like if you remember the cops from Futurama. They're
okay.
Very dull, you know, not the brightest bulbs in the shed.
Right.
They perform their function. And not necessarily the best, but there are sentinels of different colors and in different areas. And so you have to either defeat or take them over by knocking or pulling their head off.
And then assuming their identity.
By landing your head, see,
Headlander,
on their body to then continue through the puzzles. So I love how it's a mixture of so many things that I enjoy, including the puzzle pieces, because there are certain sentinels that can only go through certain doors. So if you go to an area and there are a orange and a blue door, and you look at your map and the item that you have to interact with is behind the blue door, you have to be controlling the body of a blue sentinel in order to get in that door. Different sentinels have different weapons because, you know, this is the future. So everybody fights with lasers. Everybody fights.
Pew, 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 pew.
And so some have tri shots, some have faster shots, some have slower shots, but they do more damage. So there's also a level of making sure that you've taken over the right body versus destroyed the right body to get to where you need to go to, or to clear the map as soon as you need to. And it is a great puzzler in that it's not just a straightforward, you know, duck and cover and shoot, but your lasers reflect off of the area. So there's a physics mechanic to it as well. It's figuring out, you know, can I hide behind something and get the angle right that I can take out this sentinel without having to reveal myself? You know, or is this an opportunity where I should probably land my head on their body? And so it's very interesting how those mechanics come together through various levels. I really like the power-up system that is in the game. So as you traverse through the game, one of the first areas that you'll go to is a space station, which is basically like a pleasure planet. It's called Pleasure Port. It's very mid to late 60s vibe. Like there's...
Mod kind of style.
Yeah, but robots with different people's consciousness in it, and people are trying to vibe off of crystals. And if you talk with people, the stuff that they say, it really sounds like they're on a bunch of various drugs. I would say probably LSD, the leader. With some of the really off-the-wall things that they say. Because you can talk to damn near everyone when you walk into a room. And they usually have like four or five different things that they will say. There are sometimes you can interact with the environment. So every time I went into a room that had a crystal, I would take over one of the bodies of the people in the room, and then I would interact with the crystal so I could hear what the people in the room would say. And one woman was like that she was a tulip exploring the vast universe and was in need of being planted. It's like, okay. Evidently, all right, LSD is really good. But traversing the levels to figure out when are times to use physics, when are not times to use physics. There are skills that you have to develop. And while the skill tree is pretty straightforward, it still does take time to actually build up your skills. So you need to traverse and find areas and put in extra effort to find the areas to build up your points. I forget what they're called, but they're basically little orbs of electricity that you will find through navigating the various underbelly of the area that you're in. And it's not always easy to find the entrance in, but just look for the blue glowing orbs in the ground, mostly, that you can suck up and go down into the port. Initially, the first time you run through tubes to teach you how to go through tubes and find the electrodes, there are no lasers or any other hazards that you have to get the timing right to get through to get to them. But after you go through the one tutorial one, that changes. And so you have to learn how to avoid lasers. I mean, the game should really be called Avoid Lasers, Land on Things. Because that's really all you need to do. Avoid the pew-pew, pew-pew effectively,
land on shit.
And you can win. But I love how it mixes it all together. You know, Headlander is a great game that you can pick up and play a level of two and then put down and go, you know, do whatever adulting thing that you need to do. Whether that's make dinner or run an errand or whatever. And then you can come back to it and play it. So it's a great palate cleanser because it just has such great moments of levity. And the puzzles do, as you progress through the game, become more and more challenging. And so it's not like, okay, run through wall, aim at person on ground. Now aim at person above me, ricochet off ceiling. Okay, the room is cleared. Like, you will have a mixture of sentinels that come in, so some shoot fast, some shoot slow. You will need to, you know, beef up your melee attack, because surprise, surprise, as a head, you do have melee ability, and so you need to build it up. You eventually get a shield, and you will want to build and beef up its ability so that you can shield yourself from lasers when you're ahead more often than not, because you'll need to do that. You can't just Leroy Jenkins into an area. You know, you will need to take over some of the vacuum bots so that you can get to some of the lower areas. And, you know, you should probably check out what's going on with their revolution.
Yeah.
Because there's that going on, too. And it's just...
Like, not everybody is peachy keen to be a robot with a primary objective / function. And clearly...
Everybody likes this idea of a centralized system.
Okay. And they want to...
This is bad.
And they want to throw it on the ground.
Throw it on the ground. So, you know, I think that the game really is a great game. And you can get it in Steam, or you can get it on PlayStation 4. I've actually been playing the PS4 version.
I've been playing it on PC.
And I find that with a controller, it's, at least for me, easier to work the physics. Or faster, I should say, for me to work the physics. To get through multiple levels. So I just started playing the game. I've just completed the satellite realignment section.
Okay.
And getting through that section was literally, I felt like as every time I looked at the map, that I was a hamster going through like a hamster maze.
Yeah, I know.
I love the style and the color of everything because it's just super, super vibrant. And again, the styling is great. You get to choose between being a woman or a man or an old dude. And I have a feeling that, like, at least for me, when I look at the old dude face, I feel like that's probably what Earl looks like. I keep wanting to say Carl, but what? The voiceover guy who's guiding us?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what he looks like. Or at least in my head, every time I hear the voice now, that's the face I see talking to me. Because, you know, you have to humanize the disembodied voice that's helping your disembodied head.
It's like, apparently this voice has a reason for helping us.
Right.
So, figuring out that motive is kind of fun.
But the game is super clever, and like I said, you know, if you are a sci-fi fan, you know, of yesterday and today, Headlander is just a cute, quirky game that will tickle your funny bone and hopefully also tickle your nerd nostalgia as well. Like, I love playing the game. It's a lot of fun, and I think that the team at Double Fine really did a great job of kind of capturing what the late 60s and 70s sci-fi genre looked and felt like as the backdrop of the game. You know, just the style of the robots, even the mod robots, you know, just nails it. And the style of makeup that the female head character has if you pick her, it's just spot on. Like, the vibes that they have going on from level to level, and the way that the backgrounds are designed, like, it really does feel like a Logan's Run Barbarella love fest. And if you're doing
that, had platforming, has a little bit of platforming, has a little bit of like the Metroid feel, and also throws some bullet hell in there if you like trying to avoid things from hitting you.
Right. You know, it's just, it's like a love letter to nerddom in a little game. And I think it's great. So, you know, like I said, you can pick it up on Steam, you can pick it up on PlayStation 4. I believe on the PS4 side, it's like $19.99 to buy the game. And I can't remember what price it is for Steam. But it may be in a bundle soon, a Humble Bundle, so I don't know. But definitely check it out. If you like physics puzzle games and you like nostalgic sci-fi, you owe it to yourself to play Headlander. And you can quote me on that.
I will.
I'm using quotes right now. So that's the game that we have to talk about. Let's talk about anime.
Okay.
I know you've been watching some anime.
I have been. Because, I mean, you kind of set me to task to try to watch something new. Because, I mean, I've been sitting in my wheelhouse of anything that I've currently watched that now has a new second season I've been jumping into. So, like, I was watching a lot of Shogugeki. Because it's the second season, and I have some weird mixed feelings about it. I'm just going to comment on that briefly, and then I'll get into my new one. So, I mean, I know
Shogugeki is also known as Food Wars for those of you who don't.
Shogugeki no Gassoma, I think, or something like that.
Japanese names of your anime, or you don't know what the Japanese version names of your anime are, because Hulu doesn't show them. They only show the English ones.
Usually. So, but yeah, so Food Wars. And at the end of the first season, we literally see our protagonist, Yukihara Soma, make it into the autumn elections, which are kind of like cook-offs. They're not
basically Shogun. Like,
They're not Shokugekis, but they can be Shokugekis. Like, I'm still kind of figuring out the logic on that.
Well, they allowed one to be a Shokugeki
as well as...
Basically not Shokugekis. They're basically, like, class elections.
And depending on how well you do in the autumn elections, it kind of guarantees whether or not you will get... You'll become one of the seats of the Elite Ten.
Yeah.
Depending on where you fall in that and if you happen to be the top. Right. And... So here we have our character who we know has a really strong sense of cooking, is very passionate, is very, you know, his style is very unique, and he's not, you know, culinarily trained. Like, he didn't go to school his whole life for it. He just had a dad who we find out is also kind of a prodigy and a bad boy, and he's very much like his dad, and that's from season one, so I'm not spoiling anything.
Right.
And you literally see... I think in the first episode of the second season, our protagonist going up against this girl named Alice, who is actually the cousin of this woman with the god tongue, which, going back to the first, literally she has the best palate in the fucking world.
The and most discerning palate.
So, like, she could just pick up on all the things and, like, how long you're, she could pick up on the method that you cooked it, what you put in there, and, like, so she's the person to impress. She is the person to strive to please, which is why she has the personality she does. But I digress. Go watch season one. But in season two, you know, we see Yukihira encounter two sets of the autumn election. So he's made it to the final round because there's three. And he's facing off against two guys who... both have different strong traits. One is, like, a master of spices, and one is just, you know, he gets off on, essentially, the heat of cooking to survive. And he has the great sense of, by look and touch, the freshness of food. So, right now, they are battling this... this autumn election with a particular type of fish, which the freshness pretty much determines how good your meal is. And Yukihira does not have necessarily this strong detection of freshness. It's not part of his ability. So he's a little bit the underdog in the situation. And I mean, I felt like this season kind of feels like strong filler for me. Cause like we have it in the same place every day. It's different people. Like there's been one little subplot point with one of the fucking contestants being a douche and stealing people's instruments for cooking and blah, blah, blah. But, like, the whole time that I'm watching this particular season, I'm just like, so are there not classes during this? Because it always seems like we're here. And it seems like there are weeks in between each round of this competition. And there's been no strong character development. They've thrown in some new characters who are kind of throwaway-y and aren't going to come back, it seems. And, like, it's just a little disjointed. And I'm a little concerned about that because I really do love the series. I have learned several new things to cook because of this show. It has revitalized, you know, that concept for me. And, like, I kind of want it to get back to the bigger plot point at hand. But I digress. But I've been watching that. So if you haven't, jump on that. You'll enjoy it. So around the time that I was watching the first season of Shokugeki, Food Wars, I was also obsessed with a series that's long-winded. I'm just going to call it Utapri because that's its smallest name. I actually don't think it had a English name, but essentially it was the story of a frail girl with a weak heart who is great at songs. And loves to make songs and was taught by her grandma. And she kind of looks like a rabbit because she has, like, pink eyes. And she just looks kind of weird. And she goes to this elite school for idols. Idols and or songwriters. And usually in the first semester, they assess your skill. And then if you're an idol, they assign you a songwriter. And if you're a songwriter, you get assigned to an idol or idols. It depends on the situation. And this girl gets chosen to not necessarily work with one idol, but to work with, like, I think there's seven of them. Because Starfish. Yeah. Or Starwish. Sorry. So eight. I'm sorry. Starwish. Eight. And because all these guys who have very different personalities, this is very reverse harem-ish, sort of, all find that she is talented and gifted, and they want her. Like, they don't just want her because of her ability, but they also kind of love her and want to date her, and, you know, because in the world of realism, that's exactly how that shit happens. But anyway, so in the first season of that, you see her coming to terms with the fact that all these guys want to work with her, and her only solution is to have them be a band, a boy band together. And at first, they're like, no, 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 but you see them slowly coming together. In the second season, you see them committing to that and then having their debut as an idol boy band group and have to compete against a rival group that's not comprised of nearly that many characters. It's three. And they managed to win. But anyway, that's the setup. Girl starts off at a school. Guys love her and want to be with her. And they also make really good music. That is very infectious. And you don't see too many boy idol animes. You tend to see a lot of girl ones. Like, you see Idolmaster, or you see AKB 0048. And you see... there's one I know that they're releasing that's kind of like a Danganronpa meets Idols game, which will eventually become an anime the way they have it set up. And they're playing around with this concept of Idols. And there's this anime I've been watching called B Project, which is the new anime. And I wanted to give it a shot because, once again, we are looking at the premise of girl falls into situation where she has to pretty much run and manage and nurture this boy band group. So in the show, we're following Tsubasa, and she is a new hire in the A&R department of, I think it's Gundala Music Records or something. And she just worked in a record store before this. Like, she was literally a nobody who just loved music and, like, took care of this little shop. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And she gets contacted by the head of this music company. It's like, you're going to run B Project. And she's kind of like, well, it's better pay. And he's like, absolutely, you'll be great. And she was like, sure, I will do that because I love music and I love my job. And, like, I'll miss the record store, but this could be a great opportunity. I can't wait to work with you. Like, very polite and very bland character. So I think this might have come from a game of some sorts, perhaps. And if it doesn't, it's going to become one. And on her first day, she shows up on set in her school uniform because she is just so not familiar with, you know, the fact that this job is not like any job that she's ever had before. And she gets introduced to the B Project, which is made up of three idol groups. So not one, not two, but three of them. And there are 10 men total. So that's 10 different guys with 10 different personalities with 10 unique-ish looks, who all have some type of conflict about their music stylings that should set us up for some hijinks. And I'm only a couple episodes in right now, and right now they're establishing Tsubasa's interactions with the three groups separately. So, like, the group is having a problem. Like, group A is having a problem. She spends the day, they have a fight. And some of these guys kind of look like girls, but, you know, whatever. That's anime. That's kind of how that happens. And she, with no A&R experience whatsoever, somehow articulates their problem like a savant and fixes it. Like, she's magical Negro, but in anime, she's the magical bland girl who solves all your problems. Singing zippity-doo-dah. But anyway, like I said, I'm only a couple of episodes in. But the three bands are very unique in their stylings, which I appreciate. Because, you know, in Utapre, you had single idols who all had their own unique sound that she had to make them blend together. And, I mean, all together, these are all professionals. So, of course, they sound good. So that's not where their issue is going to be, obviously. Like, you have your red hot fire passion, we just want to get our songs out to the fans band, and that's Thrive. And they kind of have like that rocker edge, and they're just like, it's like, this is our chance to be number one, blah blah blah, go team. you know, and then you've got your moons, which are kind of like your knights in shining armor. Like, they often sing, like, love ballads to women, you know, any woman, because they have to make it appeal to everybody. And, like, half of them wear glasses. They're my favorite. But that's beside the point, because they're pandering to me. And then the weird group that it hasn't strongly made a lot of sense to me. It's a two-man group, and one of them looks very much like a girl, and I totally think they're kind of doing each other. But they haven't addressed that yet in the series, and I hope that they do. And that band is, I'm going to say it wrong, but I think it's Kitakori, I think is how they pronounce it. And they're a duo. And, like, one has a very, like, melodic, you know, soft range, and then one kind of comes in and overlays, and they never record together, and their technique comes from, you know, layering one on top of the other, but their sync is off and stuff like that. So you just see, you know, these bands not really thinking Tsubasa is right to manage them. Like, they're being nice about it, but they're just like, she's not a professional. She doesn't understand the world yet, and she doesn't know what we're going to ask her to do. But then when a problem arises, she happens to naturally, without the polish, figure it out. And they're like, oh, maybe that's why the boss wanted her here. She has like an uncanny ear, or she has a strong sense of this, and she has a way of talking to the team so that we don't fight over when we're releasing singles. And like, it's just this interesting coming of story, and like this realization of, you know, how to grow as a team. And eventually we're going to obviously see her managing them all together as this 10-act Group B project. But first you got to build that up piece by piece. The music is strong. I did enjoy, because I've watched about 4 episodes, I think, so far, 3 or 4. And the songs are very good for the different styles that they are. I still think that there's something missing yet, like the big issue, besides the fact that the groups don't meld together as one fully yet, that they haven't presented the big, big, big issue that is, like, threatening them or will, like, inspire or motivate them to grow. And, I mean, they kind of established that very well in Utapri in all the seasons. Like, they kind of threw the, here's the ominous black cloud, or here's the finish line that they have to get to. Let's see how they get there. And they haven't established that yet. And I'm kind of worried at the size of the group, because I think there's just too many guys who are going to have their own issues. And it's going to end up just turning into Sally helping Tim, or Sally helping John, or vice versa.
And I think that you're right. I do think that they have taken their time, where some of the other ensemble boy band animes out there, because typically the harem pieces that are out there are usually, at least for the last 2 years, because I think the explosion with K-pop and boy bands from other countries breaking through and building up over here on the States has kind of ushered in that the whole Utapri, Star U, and now B-project type animes. And with the larger group things, there always seems to be a thread that they tend to run through the multi-group, making mega group being a trust issue.
Right. And so like I said, they haven't really even addressed where that big plot twist is going to happen yet.
No, but I think they've given some hints. Like, for each group, there seems to be one person with some major issue that makes them stand out and makes the group not quite 100% gel like the way it should.
Right.
You know, and one of those, the overarching ones, seems to be, they keep alluding to, at least in B Project, how one of the members, and I can't remember what his name is, their dad is a big star in his own right and is overseeing basically the funding of all of these groups, but isn't really involved as a dad with their kid. That's where the trust issue is in there, and that makes him super focused on just being the best, but not necessarily like completely vesting in the group. And then within the smaller groups, you have someone, if I remember correctly, in each of the groups, including the 3-member group, who's doesn't really want to be a pop star, but it was the only way that they could be in music.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't want to be an idol.
Right. So I think like I think it's going to be for these guys. I think it's going to be a trust issue, which is going to be the big thing, and it's going to be Sally being the unifying thing that they all know that they can trust because of all the experiences they've had with her helping them and supporting them.
Okay, maybe.
I think that's kind of... So I think they're hinting at it, but they haven't made it blatant like some of the other series that you've watched have made it blatant.
So, I mean... Because,
you know right off the bat from episode one, like, what the deal is.
Right. And also the same with Dupree. Like, oh no, you have to pick one guy. Oh no, she picked all guys. Now you need to make that shit work. Now you have to make them the best ever. I'm going to fire you. Like they always said.
The very best.
That's right. It's like musical Pokemon.
It is musical Pokemon. They all have their own stats. They all have their own colors. They have their own catch lines. It's musical Pokemon.
Like I said, I'm only about 3 or 4 episodes in. I'm going to see this through, obviously. Like I said, I don't hate it.
But you don't love it yet.
I'm not in love with it yet. Like, I've gone on 4 dates, and I think the dates have been good. I'm going to give it a few more.
You want to go on the fifth one.
And that's where I'm at with B Project.
Maybe there'll be steak this time.
Oh, that'd be great. Don't talk about food. I'm hungry. Your turn. What have you been watching lately?
So, I've been watching a bunch of things, but the one that I want to talk about... I think I've kind of hinted at before, but it also has run into its deeper season, which is ReZero, Starting Life Over Again from Zero.
Okay. I have not watched ReLife.
Okay. So ReZero. ReLife is different.
Okay.
So don't get them confused, because they are both available on Crunchyroll. But ReLife is different than ReZero.
All right. So I've not watched either.
Okay. So, ReZero, the protagonist is basically a hikikomori.
Okay.
Okay.
You seem to watch a lot of shows with people who are shut-ins.
Pattern, maybe?
It's like someone secretly doesn't ever want to leave her house.
I mean, you have met me, right?
Yeah.
I am an introvert stuck in an extrovert's body, but that's neither here nor there. So, in ReZero, the lead character is a hikikomori, and he, in his windsuit, tracksuit, windbreaker, whatever you call it, has gone out to the store to get some food so he can go back to his place and watch some anime and stuff. But something happens to him on the way back from picking up his ramen, minute ramen, whatever else. I
think minute ramen.
And he gets transported to this other world. And in the transport, knows that he's in the wrong place somehow, because there are, like, people with animal ears and tails walking around. And it seems kind of medievalish, but not, because they're people with animal parts walking around. So he looks over because he's in...
Is it like Animal Crossing?
No, it's more like, because they're humanoid, but they're cat girl. Or bunny people.
Okay.
Or super chibi, like most people. So they have cat... Some people have cat ears and a tail, but no fur. They have the body of a human. But somehow sprout claws.
Okay.
I dig that. Other people are super humanoid but have weird teeth. Okay, so it's just enough different that you know, hey, I'm not in Kansas anymore.
I mean, or you're at a furry convention in Kansas.
Or you're at Intro to Furry.
Right. Intro to Furry 101 con.
Down the road that you start meeting characters that are full on humanoid animals. Like, there's a guy that you meet that's basically a wolf dude.
Okay.
And he's totally a bro, but he's, like, mad powerful.
But sup, anyway, bro?
You pop in, and Subaru is the name of the character. And he looks over, because he's obviously in an area that seems to be some kind of market. and is trying to understand everything that's going on, and just starts talking to a guy that's made eye contact with him, a vendor, that's a fruit vendor, and the vendor starts talking back to him. He's like, oh shit, you can understand me. He's like, yeah, your dialect's a little weird, but I can understand you. You want to buy some fruit? And he's like, I don't have any money. He's like, well then, get out of here.
Get out of here, you scamp.
And so Subaru's
ruffian
walking around, taking everything in, trying to comprehend all the stuff that's happening to him. And the breakdown that comes to him is that, holy crap, like, I'm in some kind of feudal world, and so I just need to take my knowledge of games and anime and things like that, and I could, you know, have a good life and make things out, and it'll be cool. And as he does this, he turns down an alley accidentally, and there are some guys there that decide, hey, he's a weird guy, we want to jump him. And he tries to talk his way out of the situation. It doesn't really work out for him. And he gets beat up and nearly killed. And a girl comes to his rescue and eventually saves him. And he wants to return the favor, but he can't find her. And in searching for her, winds up finding one of the guys that she chases off. And they fight again, and this time, guy stabs him. And he's like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. And everything fades to black, and you're like, okay, series? Well, that's really weird. And then he's
back. I mean, thank you for challenging the long form with a short form anime, but what the fuck?
Right. And then, all of a sudden, he's back to the exact moment where he spawned in the city. And you see the same vendor, and everyone walking down the street the same as before. And so you learn that this guy, Subaru, for whatever reason, and when you get deeper into the series, it's a real deep reason, has been, quote-unquote, touched by the witch, the jealous witch. And he's been cursed with return through death. So as he progresses on in the world, if something happens or goes wrong or he has this overriding feeling of, like, this needs to be reset, and I need a do-over, and this is not right, and I need to make the world right. If he dies, he gets reset to the point at which he can make a difference and make a different outcome happen.
Now, does it ever happen that he goes to do this reset and he does not have He does not go back to a point where he can change decisions or direction?
Nope. Because
I feel like
right now in the series, and I've watched up through, I think, episode 17 at this point, he always returns, if he resets by death, he always returns to a point where he can change the outcome. Now, whether or not he can change the outcome to be exactly what he wants is a different story. He can change the outcome. So as an example, early on, there are characters that he meets. They are twins, Ram and Rem. And they both have had devil horns. And through some things that happened, because in their tribe, if twins are born, typically they were killed because they split the horns of the demon. They only had one horn instead of having a pair of horns, so they always seem as being less powerful.
Right.
Ram proved with her one horn to actually be more powerful than a bunch of the people in her village that had two. So they allowed the twins to live. But unfortunately, the townsfolk and even the twins' parents prized Ram and put her on a pedestal and really treated Ram like extra refuse. Like, oh, Ram, isn't your sister so great? And you're so thankful to have someone so powerful like your sister. And, oh man, it'd be so great if you could be like your sister, and your sister's going to be the same.
And resentment ensues.
Kind of. Like, Rem always loved her sister, but she always felt less than, so she didn't really apply herself because she always felt less than. And an attack on their village happened, and Rem was trying to fend off everyone, all the attackers, and keep everyone from getting killed. And Rem got cornered, and Ram went to protect her, and in the process of doing that, one of the attackers severed Ram's horn, which took a massive chunk of her power, and so she was never as powerful again. And the villagers that did survive, which did not include their parents, and they felt a little, they felt a ways about that.
I bet they did.
Ram never loved her sister less and was aware of what the villagers and her parents were doing and would always find ways to be like, but Rem's amazing too because she's such a great cook and look at all the great things that she did in the house and I wouldn't have been able to be practicing as long if Rem hadn't helped me do this and do that. So, like, the girls never resented each other.
Oh, I thought some resentment was going to come.
Rem did resent the fact that she was never able to be thought of in the same way as her sister. And Subaru fixes this at one point, and it's just like, so you just need to stop worrying about the past and things like that. You just need to smile and look forward. It's like, because I'll tell you something, Rem, like, when you smile, the world is a better place. So Rem falls in love with Subaru.
Of course he does.
She does. But Subaru doesn't really fall in love with Rem. Subaru is in love with Amelia, who was the girl that saved him.
Okay.
And anybody that's elven and has white hair is believed to be touched by the Jealous Witch. So nobody wants anything to do with them. Because if you're touched by the Jealous Witch, you're cursed. And Rem lets Subaru know. She's like, I don't know why, but sometimes I can smell the witch on you. And that's not really good because it attracts, like, really bad things. Which bad things ensue. So the series is basically this Hikikomori trying to make himself to be this big deal. And he can't tell anybody that he has returned by death because when he starts explaining it, the world pauses and the witch actually reaches out and starts to stop his heart. And if the witch herself stops his heart, he actually dies.
Okay.
Can't return again. So he can't tell anybody anything related to his return by death. So when he is reset, he can't tell people why he's doing things the way that he's doing them.
Well, right, because they don't reach out. For them, this is the first encounter with it.
Right.
And for him, it's not.
Right.
There's a lot of animes that like to play with that concept of characters out of time or characters who have relived moments.
Yeah, just like No Game, No Life.
Yeah. So they love to play with that concept of, you know, what a character would do with the hindsight knowledge of an outcome.
Right? Because it's the ultimate freeing thing if you're a writer, right? Because now you can go down all the paths, okay? You don't have to just choose the one and stay linear. You can go, okay, so I got to this point and I'm thinking we could do this or we could do that. And so then the answer is, okay, well, you can do both. Start writing both paths and then we'll determine which one is the first one we try and then which one is the one that we ultimately end up going with. But it still allows you to play out both scenarios and bring the watcher along with you. So there's a lot of gore and fighting in ReZero. And it does get bloody. I mean, there are many, many times that many, many people die. You know, heads get lopped off and you gotta watch it hit the ground. And there's one scene that, you know, one bad guy who's basically the embodiment of Sloth.
Okay.
Destroys Rem in front of Subaru. And it breaks Subaru that the way that Rem was destroyed that time, as well as the way that Amelia is attacked at one point. It destroys him later on in the series to a point where he decides, you know what? I'm not going to go after this. And so he corners Rem and says, you know what, I want you to run away with me. I'm going to stop all this stuff that I've been doing, and I'm not going to go and try to help Amelia. I want you to come away with me, Rem. Because he knows how Rem feels about him. He's like, I just want you to come away with me. We'll make a life. I have enough skills and you have enough skills. We can get a little, you know, work and put a little money aside and get a house and we can have a life together. So he basically is crying, proposing to Rem. And Rem takes a moment and says no. And he's like floored by it. And she starts to, because he tries to convince her and she stops him. And it's the moment in the series where I got a little emotional, because she runs through this whole litany of course I've imagined a life with us together many times. I can see us, you know, you working your job and us having a little home and how long it would take for us to get it. And, you know, I would end up working with a blacksmith or something. And eventually, you know, if we were blessed, we would have, you know, a child or two. And of course I can see it. And there are like tears coming out of Rem's eyes. She's like, but at the same time, I know it's the thing that, while it would make me the happiest in the world, and I would love to make you the happiest in the world, I know I'm not it. And so it would be cruel to do.
Oh, man.
Like, even though I do. And it's the first time that she, like, blatantly tells him to his face that she loves him. And so as long as she can just stay by his side and he won't push her away, that'll be the happiness that you'll have in the world. And so she's basically saying, look, I know that we could do this and you would fake being happy with me, but you wouldn't be completely happy with me. Because she knows.
And I would know that and live in pain for the rest of my life.
Right. And so he finally is like, okay, but Rem, I'm going to be really greedy then because I need to save Amelia because I love her. And I'm going to have to keep you by my side in order to accomplish it. And she's like, well, that's a really greedy thing to say to me after all of this, while she's kind of smiling and crying. And he's like, hey, you had it coming. You turned down my amazing once-in-a-lifetime proposal. And then that's...
Well, that's because... But that's because he knows that she won't.
Right. And so it gets very deep, and it seems very simple on the surface, but ReZero, Starting Life Over Again, is...
He seems to have taken to this quite well. Like,
it breaks him, though. Like, he spends almost four episodes where you feel for him because he has a psychotic break, because dying and then coming back and having that knowledge of, if you don't get things right, you die and you can't tell anybody about what you experienced, because then you die. And every time he dies, it's gruesome. And just about everybody around him, when he messes it up, dies in a gruesome way. It's a very, very hard thing to bring back, and a maddening thing that I can't tell you why you need to do this. You just need to do this thing. And knowing that if they don't do this, like, everybody in the house is going to be ripped apart. Even the children are going to have their limbs torn off, lit afire, like, carcasses strewn everywhere. Because, like, it's very visceral when the bad stuff happens. So, ReZero, it looks like a simple action anime. It is not. Like, I wouldn't put it in the Akame ga Kill category, but it's, like, a step right under Akame. Because Akame was just serious all the way through, and this has way too many moments of levity.
I wouldn't say it was serious all the way through. Like, it always kept going back to a serious point. And, like, any time that they gave you... you know, like a filler episode that had something more lighthearted going on, you knew that eventually it was going to return to its form. Like, I can't remember what her name was, but the one with the pink hair who could mask herself to look like anyone, like, she had that ability. Like, here she has this little light moment with the lead, you know, where she's, like, talking about where she got her skill and how her whole team got taken out and how she was never going to put herself, you know, in danger, which is where her skill kind of developed. And, like, they have that kind of moment, and you know that she's going to try to go and take out his threat because she loves him, because they all do. And, like, you just saw her getting, you know, beaten down by those two, and you knew they were going to take her out. And, like, when it kind of came back to it, I'm like, oh, man, like, they took out her legs already. They're just going to, I thought they were just going to leave her as, like, a bloody pulp to be seen.
Well, here's my thing, and I got to wrap it up really quickly, but when I say Akame ga Kill was serious in the beginning, I mean the tones of the anime.
Okay. Serious
right from episode one. Like, it did not start off with, oh, I'm a lighthearted fellow and we're going through the world, and, like, two episodes in, it got dark. Like, Akame ga was dark from beginning. ReZero is not. It's not until, really, the final moments of the first episode that it gives you any kind of clue that, ooh, shit ain't right.
So, okay.
I highly recommend, if you like your anime to be definitely more on the adult undertone, mature level, not only just for the visuals that you see, but also the story they're trying to tell, you definitely want to check out ReZero. And it is... in love with it. So, and it's pretty.
Okay.
It's drawn really well. I think you're going to see a lot of cosplay from it. So, with that, that's what we've got for this week. Games and anime. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. So if you like what we talk about and you enjoy what we do, make sure you check out our website, electricsisterhood.com. We do all kinds of reviews, not just us, but the entire Esh team, on everything from games to comics to anime and back again, including even some TV and movies. So again, bookmark it. Check it out all the time, electricsisterhood.com. You can also check out our news and reviews in Apple News if you use the iOS device. So add us to your favorites really quickly, and that way when we put new content out, you'll see it in your For You section. You can also check out our podcast through our site, also in iTunes, which you can search for the Eshcast either through the desktop application or the podcast application on your iOS device and subscribe to us. You can also get our podcast through Stitcher Radio. If you're not living La Vida I, you can get it on Google Play. You can find us on Vogue Network, as well as some other amazing shows. So pretty much any place that podcasts can be found, you will find the Eshcast. So make sure that you subscribe, and the moment that we put out new episodes on the web, you'll be able to get a hold of them. We rather enjoy doing it. We hope you enjoy listening to it, and let us know. And you can reach out to us a bunch of different ways. Use the contact form on our website. You can hit us up on Twitter at ESH News, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Land of Esh, or even on Instagram, sharing some of the stuff that we're playing and doing at ESH News. So if you got a question or there's something that you want us to check out or want us to review, then hit us up through social and be like, yo, Sisters of Esh, you guys should totally review blah, 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 because I would love your thoughts on it. And if we review it, we'll give you a shout out in the podcast and be like, so, blah, 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 wanted us to check out this game. So we did. And here's what we thought. And we'll even give you credit in the notes for the podcast episode. You can have, like, some internet fame. And who doesn't want some internet fame?
I do.
Also, make sure that you check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/electricsisterhood. Surprise, surprise. We've got videos from events that we've gone through, as well as that's where you'll find some of our gameplay video stuff. All on our YouTube channel, so subscribe. And when we put new content out, you'll get it there first, too. So, we're all upon the webs. Our entire team is taking over the nets. So, that's KBD over at B3Crew.com. Definitely check out the No Borders, No Race podcast. Lots of great stuff on indie music and anime and manga and entertainment through theater and all kinds of stuff. It's just super, super good. And you can also learn a little Japanese. So, check out No Borders, No Race over at B3Crew.com. Also, Wednesday night streams at 9 p.m. Eastern. Our homeboy, HamsterMan2049, holding it down on the Smash Rook live stream. You can get the link every single week on our social and on our Facebook page. So you can check out his live stream on Twitch. And he plays all kinds of games, new and old. So make sure that you check him out. It's absolutely fun. You can interact with chat. It's a good time. And definitely check out the stuff that's going on at SmashRook.com. Our homie, Phil, the Issues Guy, with Phil's Recap and Review. Some hysterical TV show recap episodes. You definitely want to check them out. Subscribe to his YouTube channel. There's nothing like it on the web. You can call in live, chat live, be part of the recap show live. It is absolutely some of the best entertaining things I have seen on the web in a long time. Issuesprogram.com, Phil's Recap and Review. Definitely want to check it out. And of course, all the other nerd stuff that you crave can be found at nerdcrave.com. Comics, anime, video games. Definitely, definitely some free over at nerdcrave.com. So make sure that you bookmark all of our sites. Check out everything that the team is doing. And as always, reach out to us through our respective social channels and let us know that you love us. Show us some love. Show us some likes. Retweet some of our stuff. Introduce your friends to us. Pass us around.
We are.
So with that, it's time for us to take the mic of 1,000 truths and pack it away. So I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Panalicious.
Until next time, folks.
Bye, y'all.